Hi, everyone, and welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can also email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow Golf Newsnet on Twitter if you choose. Golf Newsnet is the handle there. Facebook.com/golfnewsnet. And also find my work at Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf Blog on sports.yahoo.com, as well as golfnewsnet.com. You can also follow Golf Newsnet Radio on TuneIn, either at TuneIn.com or the TuneIn Radio app. So, Solheim Cup has the lead of the discussion this week, right? And here's the really interesting thing about it. And I'm a big fan of the LPGA Tour. I watch most LPGA events. I watch as much of the Solheim Cup as I could for a guy who has a two-year-old who wants to get up early and fall asleep pretty late for his age. But nonetheless, I tried to watch as much Solheim Cup as I could. And I noticed, obviously, that when the Suzanne Pedersen incident happened, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, that the interest level throttled up very, very quickly, and that all of a sudden, more people in golf terms, in terms of broader golf fans, were interested, and even folks who didn't necessarily follow golf week to week were interested in it, because nothing changes perception quite like obvious drama, especially drama that can feel jingoistic. And you can easily take a side and cast a villain and all that stuff. So let's reset, in case you didn't watch the Solheim Cup. So on Sunday morning, they resumed a session of four-ball matches that had not been completed on Saturday because there was a weather delay. They called play for darkness. Second day in a row they had done that after a weather delay. And the match in question here is Suzanne Pedersen and Charlie Hall teaming up in their better brawl match against Allison Lee and Brittany Lincecum. And on the 17th hole, Lee has an 8-foot birdie putt to win the hole. She misses the putt, goes by left 18 inches, and Pedersen starts to walk to the 18th hole, and so does Charlie Hall, despite what she protested after the fact, so she might want to watch the footage again. And the walking referee for the match, Dan Miceli, who's an LPGA referee, so it's not like it's a Duke refs thing, you know, or an LET refs thing. It's an LPGA guy, so he sees Allison Lee and Brittany Lincecum regularly. And he starts to announce that the hole has been halved in pars because he probably noticed, just the same as everyone else did, that Pedersen and Hall were walking away, which is kind of the universal sign of a silent that's good. But it is not an explicit sign that's good under the rules of golf. So Lee, thinking that she had heard either Hall or Pedersen say it was good, scoops up the putt. And then all of a sudden, all of the Europeans, but particularly Suzanne Pedersen, realizes that Lee has picked up the putt, and no one, she believes, has said to her that it's good, neither Hall nor herself. And she tells Miceli what has happened, and Miceli says, okay, well, you have to believe the person who is going to be giving the putt, the conceder, I guess, and that means that Lee picked up her putt prematurely, and she loses the hole. The Americans lose the hole. And as Lee was trying to pick up the putt, you can see Brittany Lincecum saying, don't pick it up, don't pick it up, because she must not have heard a concession that Lee heard or thinks she heard. And all of a sudden, the Americans are down one heading into the 18th, and then the Europeans win the 18th with a par, and they win the match 2-up, and the Americans are shell-shocked, and there's a discussion on the 18th green, and Lee is in tears. Hall is in tears. Pedersen is defiant and adamant that what she did was right and fine. Lincecum looks like she just wants to be fishing. And the session ends. The Europeans are up 10-6. And then the Americans go out and pace the Europeans, win 8.5 points out of 12. Could have easily won 9 points out of 12. And win the Solheim Cup 14.5-13.5. They end a 2-match losing streak. They win on the road for the first time since 07, which means really they had only lost once on the road. It's not that big a deal. But they do that, and all of a sudden, Suzanne Pedersen is not only the new villain for the American team, but she's also the scapegoat for the European team, because the Europeans can say, well, she should have given that putt, and if she had, perhaps the Americans wouldn't have been as motivated. They would have been more upset had they lost the match under normal circumstances, and they just lost the 18th hole and lost one down, then they may have been crushed and not have come back. So she gets to be the scapegoat too. And a few hours after the opening or the closing ceremony concludes the Solheim Cup, she's asked about the incident and whether she would do it all over again. And she reiterates that she would, and that she was trying to win, and therefore she did what she could to help her team win by noticing that Allison Lee had done something that had not been afforded to her, and under the rules of golf, that gave her team a win. And Charlie Hall, as I mentioned earlier, said that she had not been walking off the green toward the 18th hole, as had been suggested, but rather was going to talk to Pedersen about whether to give the putt, but that she wasn't going to give the putt, which is probably a load of bullshit, because of the way the film looks, and she's clearly walking like this hole is over, and she's going straight to 18, and that there's a chance to get a whole point, or a half point, or no points, but that it's not set in stone. And then Hall kind of leaves it alone, nothing more said about it, because she was excellent throughout the matches, and I think it was probably, she realized it was probably the wiser to say, not much more else than that. And then the next day, Pedersen, early in the morning, posts a rather innocuous-looking photo on Instagram with a 5 or 6 paragraph apology as the caption, saying that she kind of got swept up in the moment, and she probably shouldn't have done that, and yes, the rules of golf had it right, but she was kind of wrong in the spirit of things, and she apologized to Julie Inkster, the American captain, saying she's all class, and that the Americans played great, and that she hopes that golf fans will come to be a fan of hers again, and not hold this over her for the rest of her professional career. And I think that is something that should be commended. You realize that you were wrong, or that the tide is turning against you and you look wrong, and you apologize. And she apologized to her credit without the "I'm sorry if anyone to anyone who is offended" line. And she just said, "I'm sorry. I made a mistake." I think that deserves some kind of commendation. Of course, you could not convince most people that she wouldn't or would have made that apology had the Europeans won, for one, and two, had the reaction not been so vociferous against her. And I think that she probably got a good idea, good whiff of what people were saying on social media and through other channels, and even someone she, I assume, respects, and Dame Laura Davies said she wouldn't want to be on the European team, and that she made Pedersen made a terrible mistake, and all of those things. And there could have been a sponsor in there calling, namely Nike, saying, "Hey, you might want to clean this up a little bit," or an agent saying, "It's probably a good idea to just go ahead and apologize for this." You know, under the rules of golf, I keep mentioning this and everything that I've written or said about it, Suzanne Pedersen is right. The Americans broke the rules. Namely, Allison Lee broke the rules. She assumed a putt was good and did not hear that it was good from the player. She might have heard it from a fan. She may have even heard it from one of the caddies, but you got to hear it from the player. And she didn't do that. She didn't verify it. You know, the old Reagan line, trust but verify. You trust that an 18-inch putt is good, even though, as Brandel Chamblee had pointed out in Golf Channel's coverage after the fact, that I.K. Kim lost a major missing a 1-foot putt. Hey, so did Doug Sanders, by the way. But I think that if I'm Lee, I'm thinking, that's good. That's a straight in putt from 18 inches. In a professional competition, I'm going to assume that's good. And that's probably why when she heard what she heard, which was probably a fan, that she just went ahead and picked it up without even thinking twice about it. And credit to Lincecum for trying to warn her, don't pick it up. Get the absolute concession. Know it for a fact. Then you pick it up. And she didn't do that. I think that for Pedersen, realizing that the point was on the line, because let's say the Americans have that hole and win the 18th. Now it's a 9-7 contest. All of a sudden, what was a 4-point lead is a 2-point lead. And that's a much bigger deal in these kinds of competitions. That match was a huge point, and Pedersen knew it. And she was going to do whatever it took to get that point. I think if she had not been the instigator, I think if Charlie Hall had been the instigator, I think things would have been a little bit different. But Pedersen is viewed as very intense, intimidating, not necessarily a rules hawk, but someone you don't want to mess with. And I think that reputation preceding the incident did not help how people perceived her threw it and after it. They just saw her as someone who was desperate to win and didn't understand the spirit of the competition, which, quite frankly, the spirit of the competition is also bullshit. It may be an exhibition over 3 days, but both sides are trying to win. This isn't just for fun and games. I mean, it is ultimately fun and games. It's golf, for crying out loud. But for the folks, the 12 folks on each side of those competitions, men and women, men, women, whatever, it's intense. It's a big deal for them in the moment. And it means something for their careers and the stupid word of legacy, which most people will not remember in the end. But that for them in that moment, it means everything. And so that's why Pedersen made that call. Ultimately, I think that she should have said to Maselli, look, let him putt it again. Let Lee putt it again. And put it down where it was. We know for a fact it was 18 inches by on the left. Let her putt it in for par, and we'll go to the 18th, and we'll play all square. And I think that would have been enough to quell the problem pretty quickly. But because she insisted on this penalty, then the Europeans won the match. Then she insisted on it on the green while Allison Lee is crying, a bad look. Ask any guy who's ever fought with his girlfriend and continues to make the point when she's crying. It's a bad look. And then, after the Europeans lose, because everyone is motivated by what Pedersen did to the only player on the team that wasn't on the 2013 team that got waxed in Colorado, so they're trying to protect her. Then Angela Stanford wins 2-up to beat Pedersen. She ends a streak of a winless streak of nine matches in the Solheim Cup. Angela Stanford has been one of the worst American Solheim Cup players in history. She is the Jim Furyk of American Solheim Cup players, and she turns out to make the biggest point of her life in a match against the new villain. And then the Americans complete the comeback, and then Pedersen is adamant that she still did the right thing in defeat. And then comes the apology. It's pretty easy to understand why people are cynical about why Pedersen offered an apology and may not consider it heartfelt. I get it. It's a tough one, because if you're Pedersen and you don't apologize, then you set yourself up. She's 34 years old. She's still got plenty of golf left in her life, plenty of competitive golf in her life, especially in the States and in the LPGA. And if she doesn't apologize, guess what happens every time an American golf fan who doesn't like what she did sees her at a tournament? Boo birds come out, cheater, a-hole, whatever, whatever you want to throw at her. And it's funny that I said a-hole, not asshole, after saying bullshit twice earlier in the podcast. Sorry about that. But that tarnishes her going forward. It creates an unnecessary distraction for her going forward, because she's got to deal with that guy. She's got to look at that fan, whoever it is, and absorb the hate that they're slinging her away. So I think she tried to stave off a little something here. Whether it was sponsor motivated or not, it was just personally motivated. Realized it was practical to offer an apology instead of remain so vigilant in her stance of standing by the rules of golf. I think that was the prudent thing to do. What that means going forward, who knows? We'll find out when the LPGA kicks back up. It's going to go through an Asian swing as well, which I don't think this is going to resonate quite as much. So I think she saves a little bit of time there. So there are a couple of U.S. events remaining. Obviously, there's a Tour Championship remaining to decide the race to the CME Globe. I think that'll be a sideshow story for that tournament. How is Suzanne Pedersen received? Meanwhile, MB Park and Lydia Ko are going to battle it out for the season-long race. And others could get there, but the season-long race belongs in their hands at this point. So I think it's going to be an unfortunate mar on what was some really great golf at the Solheim Cup. You had Pedersen played okay, but Anna Nordqvist was great, carried her in a match, carried Caroline Hedwall to a point who I'm not even sure could hit a 100-yard shot very well that weekend. You had Carlotta Segonda, who eagled from the 17th hole to save a match. She was incredible throughout the course of the week. Charlie Hall, as we mentioned, was brilliant. I mean, she's 19 years old and is a Solheim Cup rookie and is just lethal in match play. Mel Reed is clutch. And whether you like Mel Reed or not, you should. And not just because her mom died in a car accident in Germany and she came back to Germany and was triumphant in the Solheim Cup. She's a really good golfer. She's clutch, and she's gone through a lot since her mom's passing to try to battle back to a place where she gives a shit about golf again and competitive golf and being good and maximizing her talent. And I think, I hope for her that this week is an indication that she can be as good as she thinks she can be and apply that week to week on the Ladies European Tour or wherever she wants to play. I hope that that's the case. And for the Americans, you had some great golf as well. Christy Kerr was quietly brilliant, playing alongside Lexi Thompson, who was wonderful, who putted better than I may have ever seen her putt in her life over the course of the 3 days. Obviously, Angela Stanford came up huge in a big spot, but Jarena Pillar was incredible. She was the one who saved the Solheim Cup rally on Sunday, making the par putt from about 10 feet away against Caroline Masson. The other German player on the team was Sandra Gall, with it all on the line to save the point, save the match. Otherwise, the Europeans lock up a tie and pretty much negate whatever happens the rest of the way with the American rally. They hold on to the cup. So, Jarena Pillar was huge. Paula Creamer was big. She was the captain's pick, having a terrible year. And I know that the LPGA players and the Golf Channel commentators mocked the notion that her pick by Julie Ingster was controversial because she was 11th in the point standing. But she played terrible for most of the season. She's been trying to make some changes in her game. Her life has changed. She got married. She's really happily married. She wants to be actively involved in a relationship, just like anybody who gets married in that first couple of years where it feels so new, even though it is somewhat of the same. But you're going through adventures together in life, and you want to absorb those. You want to do that. And I commend that. I mean, you're present in your relationship. Good for you, Paula Creamer. But her golf has suffered, and that made her a controversial pick. But she went out in the first match of the week and won a point with Morgan Pressel. And in the last match of the week, she locked up the Solheim Cup. That's big stuff. That's heady stuff. And in the process in that last match, kicked the pants out of Sandra Gall, who played some pretty uninspiring golf in her home country, and so did Masson, for that matter, over the course of the 3 days. It was a great event, and unfortunately it's going to get marred a little bit here by what happened with Pedersen, but then you've got the butt bumping on the American side. You got Michelle Wee walking off a hole before the Europeans were done. So that's a little bit of a play off of what happened this time in 15. And I'm sure there'll be something in Iowa in 2017. Iowa. Ugh. But Iowa in 2017. And this will just continue to go on and on. But this series continues to breathe new life into itself. And I think that's really great for the women's game. And I for as much as folks don't like drama, and they get annoyed with it, it kind of helped the Solheim Cup here. Not that I'm advocating for a constant flow of it, but there was plenty of it between Julie Ingster and European captain Karen Koch getting into each other's grills about the captain's agreement after resting players, European players rested 40 minutes, which they were allotted through the captain's agreement, changing tee times, which the Americans weren't told about, and then Annika Sorenstam for the second time in as many Solheim Cups getting interrogated about the possibility of giving unacceptable advice to players in matches, which the assistant captains, which she was, aren't allowed to do unless they're designated by the captain to do it. So that was also a source of controversy too. But very entertaining Solheim Cup, and I'm sure it was more entertaining than the President's Cup will be. So we'll see how that plays out in a few weeks' time. We got the playoff finale this week at East Lake in Atlanta, the Tour Championship, 30 players. Top five heading in are Jordan Spieth is number two, Jason Day is first, Ricky Fowler is third, Henrik Stenson is fourth, and Bubba Watson's fifth. If any of those guys win the Tour Championship, they win the FedEx Cup, and in the process, it's an $11.8 million payday if they win both. And since 2010... the winner of the FedEx Cup, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, has also been the winner of the Tour Championship. So we haven't had someone win the Tour Championship and not win the FedEx Cup since 09, the first year of this points concept, this construct where they reset the points heading in and give the top five a mathematical advantage, and everybody has a mathematical chance to win based on scenarios. So the expectation, obviously, is 5 years running, we've had the winner of at East Lake win the whole thing. But there is a realistic possibility that Henrik Stenson could finish tied for third or better, so second or third, not win an event all season and win the FedEx Cup. It's possible. Hasn't happened before. There has not been a FedEx Cup champion who hasn't won at least once during the season, either regular season or playoffs. And that would be a little bit of history, especially since Hunter Mahan, who had played every single FedEx Cup event, is no longer the Iron Man because he didn't qualify for the Tour Championship. So that's a little piece of history to add to it in this ninth season of the FedEx Cup. Then there's the stupid manufactured debate, which every person has tried to shut down of influence, of is Jason Day the player of the year if he wins the Tour Championship and wins the FedEx Cup? Over Jordan Spieth, the guy who was four shots away from winning the single season Grand Slam and who won the first two majors of the year and has four wins this year. So Fowler said he would put it down to Day and Spieth. I think he believes Spieth would be the winner. Rory McIlroy spoke this morning at the Tour Championship, said he believes and will give his vote to Spieth for Player of the Year because he trumps, majors trump all. And I think that the sentiment among the players is similar, that we've hit them over the head and they've hit themselves over the head so many times over the years that the majors are more important than anything else, that if you win a major, it's more like winning two tournaments instead of one. So, or three tournaments or four, whatever value you want to associate with it. But it's more than one event because of the historical implication. And so these guys are probably going to vote for Jordan Spieth to be POY regardless of what happens this week. Now, if Spieth wins the Tour Championship and wins the FedEx Cup, obviously the point is rendered moot. Five wins, FedEx Cup, two majors, it's done. That he's your player of the year. Spieth was runner-up here last year. Or 2 years ago, I should say. So he has a modest record, one for one, in this event. So I think he's a guy to look out for this week. He played well in Chicago, just didn't have the kind of world-beating game plan that Jason Day did to hit driver on every hole 350 yards and then hit a flip wedge in and make a 15-footer. I mean, if that's your game plan and you can execute it, you're pretty much unstoppable. And that's what Jason Day has been doing since July. Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable. But Jason Day's year has not been as good as Spieth's collectively. Spieth has one less win, one more major. He's been in the top three more often, been in the top 10 more often than Jason Day. So I think it really just boils down to, and Doug Ferguson said this well from the Associated Press, this is a referendum on how important the FedEx Cup playoffs are to PGA Tour players and the measure of a good season. Because if the playoffs matter as much or even close to majors, then with three wins in the playoffs, you can say Jason Day is the player of the year. If majors mean that much more than the playoffs, then Jordan Spieth is the player of the year. So we'll see that vote, obviously, about a month or two from now. But I think that's the discussion point here. And it's something to spice up what is already going to be an interesting event. I don't think we need to have this discussion. I think that it's pretty clear that Jordan Spieth is the player of the year. But you can also be the player of the year and not have the best season, if that makes sense. Player of the year, to me, is kind of like most valuable player. You can be the most valuable player on a losing team. You can be the most valuable player in the league in a losing effort. Because if you think about Felix Hernandez when he won a Cy Young, I think he was, 14-12 when he won his Cy Young against, he was with the Mariners, still with the Mariners. But he had a terrible win-loss record, but all of his other statistics showed he had a dominating season and that it was a historic best. Now, Jake Arrieta is having the best July in the history of baseball, one of the best months in the history of baseball, not just 20th win last night for the Cubs. He has a 0.48 ERA this month, or in the last five starts or something. That's incredible. That's unheard of from any kind of player. I mean, Bob Gibson in 1968 had a stretch of five starts where his ERA was like 1 1/10. Arrieta is half that, better than half that. So I think you have to look at a season for Player of the Year, not in terms of who won the most, but rather who had the most historically important season, historically relevant. And I think right now, in maybe 5 years when the FedEx Cup is hitting its 14th season, it's been around a while, then guys will value the playoffs a little bit more. And this would be more of a fight. But the precedent tells us, too, that Jordan Spieth is the player of the year. I mean, think back to 2008. Tiger Woods had an incredible season, first half of it. Won the U.S. Open on one leg, and then we didn't see him the rest of the way. Well, Patrick Harrington stepped in and won the remaining two majors of the year. And Woods said explicitly, the guy that has more majors wins POY. Guess who won POY? Patrick Harrington. So I think if you take the Woods doctrine to heart, and I think a lot of these guys do, then Jordan Spieth is your player of the year. But we get one more week for it to play out, and we get to see if Jason Day can put together another dominating performance on a golf course where it's really hard to separate yourself from the pack. It really is. I mean, it is one of the more fair tests East Lake is on the PGA Tour schedule. It hovers around par. Par is a great score at East Lake. So if in the end you're somewhere in the area of 8-10 under par, you've had a great week and you've probably got a good chance to win the tournament. It's a little bit of a different approach than how Day went about dominating Conway Farms and dominated Plainfield to win the Barclays in the first leg. Can't be quite as aggressive at East Lake. That calls for a different kind of game, and that's why so many players, I think, aren't necessarily well-suited to the golf course. You still have to be long. I mean, you've got to be out there to give yourself a chance to hit the greens in regulation. But on a 7,400-yard track like this, you got to be somewhat tempered in how much you go after the golf ball. Because if you find the Bermuda rough, it's tough to get out of there. It's tough to find the green. It's tough to find the green close. So I can't wait to see this week. I think it's going to be great. You can join us on Rabble.tv for two rounds this week. We're going to do Friday and Saturday for you for the Tour Championship, our complimentary audio coverage. And not complimentary as in free, but complimentary with an E in the middle to help audio coverage of the Tour Championship. And that'll be on Rabble.tv. We'll put the times and links to the broadcasts on our website. Next week on the show, we'll have this tournament to review, and the PGA Tour season to review as it officially wraps up with the end of the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll talk about who wins. We'll talk about whether we changed our mind on the Player of the Year race, depending on the outcome. And we'll kind of start delving into who might get their tour cards through the web.com Tour Finals, which is their third event is this week in Columbus, Ohio. Until next week, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you listen to us that way. We'll answer your questions and comments only with a 5-star review at iTunes. Or you can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter, @RyanBallingy. Check out golfnewsnet.com when you have a chance. Until next week, saying thanks so much for listening. I'm Ryan Ballingy, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.